The Guardian.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, international action. Crisis in Chisinau as Moldova bend over for Roy's England. We get the reaction and Moldova reaction on the road to Rio. Meanwhile, on the road to ruin, Scotland goalless again, Wales beaten again, and Ireland can't even get on TV. There's also Marouane Fellaini, Spainy, and Jacob's Wales call-up in today's Football Weekly. Okay, it's a packed show ahead of us. Paul McInnes is here. Hi, Paul.
Hiya.
You're looking bronze from a trip to the seaside.
Yes, I went to the seaside the last weekend of summer.
That's right. It was the last weekend of summer, but not the last weekend of qualifying. Hooray, Jacob Steinberg.
Hooray.
Hooray. We've got another one coming up in about a month.
And tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, and there's that. It must stop, this madness. Barry, what do you think? Qualifiers, thumbs up, thumbs down? Nobody watches any qualifiers.
I did watch some this weekend.
What did you watch?
I watched Scotland-Serbia.
Of all the football in all the world.
Well, I couldn't watch my own country playing.
Because they weren't on telly.
Because they weren't on telly. And thank God, because it would have been traumatic.
Right.
They certainly put their fans through the ringer and could have completely...
Some of their own players as well.
Yes, indeed.
Mm. Okay, well, tell you what, there's so much to be excited about. England with a 5-0 win. This same England who stunk out the Euro 2012 competition. Now, burst back onto the scene, third-ranked nation in the world, with a massive 5-0 win, Paul.
Rejuvenated.
Yeah.
It's the same. I don't want to get into, but you have to be honest. This is the same old cycle. This is what happens. You know, we go out on penalties. We have a glamour friendly. We do all right in. Then we start the qualifying and we look like a half-decent team.
Yes.
Then we get to the tournament. We have half a performance in the group stage, half a bad performance in the group stage. We get to the first knockout round. We meet the first good team. Or the quarterfinals, depending on how many teams are in the tournament. And then we go out on penalties again. It's the cycle.
All right, that's saved us for a whole season's worth of international.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing I thought about watching England was I wasn't sure. It's like Tom Cleverley has effectively two sides based around him. Like, kind of, he's critical to Manchester United now and he's critical to England. And have we ever... I mean, how are we sure he's that effective?
He's really highly rated, though, at United. And I think... what I heard is that when he was in the reserves, Solskjaer was a huge fan of him when he was the reserve team coach. But he's had a year off with injury, so he's still coming back from that. And he's had a lot of loans, so it's a huge year for him to get into it. But there's a lot of expectation on Tom Cleverley. But it was quite odd actually watching him play once with her against West Ham. And, you know, when he actually scored. And she kind of had to bite her tongue when he put one in. Luckily it was last minute and it was 3-1 already.
If Cleverley's so good, why was his position the one that Fergie bought Kagawa in for?
It's not.
Isn't it?
No.
Well, it isn't because he's moved Cleverley back, but that was what Cleverley was there for, wasn't it?
I don't know. I think he can do more. He can kind of play in the Wilshire, that kind of position, a bit deeper.
On the sixth?
Never playing. But no, Kagawa plays a bit further forward, doesn't he? But
right.
Hodgson was saying that he could play some sort of Fabregas role, which is... On the bench?
On the bench. We'll come on to Cesc and his lack of joy of Cesc a bit later on, perhaps. Ian McIntosh says, I want to write about how pleasing England's passing was, but I'm fairly sure that I saw two of the Moldovan defenders smoking at one point. It wasn't the toughest test. There are tougher challenges to come, San Marino. And, of course, the Ukraine, Tuesday night at Wembley. Woof. No Shevchenko. He's retired. How does that affect Ukraine as they approach a grudge match against England? Because there was a lot of bitterness after their clash with Roy Hodgson's side in Euro 2012, wasn't there, Jacob? Wasn't there?
Yes, because they had the one of their own ghost goals when John Terry cleared it off the line from I can't remember who it was, but it was a couple of yards over the line and they missed it, and they would have gone through into the quarterfinals along with England if it had gone in.
Yeah,
but the linesman wasn't able to spot it, and they were pretty good in that game actually. They carved England open a few times, so it could be difficult, especially without England are missing John Terry at the back, so it could be a bit makeshift.
And right, so who'll make those clearances from over the line?
Gary Cahill.
Gary Cahill, mm. Okay.
It's funny, and I know kind of you need newspapers need football stories, but like back page leader, the Sun today is Terry out for Ukraine qualifier. I mean, it strikes me that yeah, he did have a good tournament. He is a great player, but he is getting on. And actually, all the deputies.
Oh, right.
All the deputies who've played in that England central defence have actually acquitted themselves quite well over the past few years. Right. I think from Jagielka, Lescott and Cahill.
Well, he'd be delighted to acquit himself, but that's not really his... anyway, we'll move on from that.
That Ukraine game, that was famously the one where Ole blocking the coach offered a journalist out afterwards. They were going to fight like men.
Like men. Cool.
Naked and oiled up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a fight with a man this weekend. Were you naked and oiled up?
No, it was... No, I was in my light Airtex Ivory Coast simulation replica orange kit, and I had a fight with somebody because he tackled me, and his foot went over my ankle and kind of into my shin, and I was like, this is not in the spirit of the game.
Right.
But he was like, you do that all the time and you never notice. And I was like, oh yeah, do I? And he was like, oh yeah, you do.
Right.
And it escalated from there.
Wait, got it from there?
Believe.
Right. Okay.
Was there a lot of effing and jeffing in that conversation?
Yeah, that
as well.
Was the family edit.
Right.
All right.
I was just going to say, it's disappointingly clean compared to what we heard.
No, revolved around, the crux of the argument revolved around which of either of us was more of the C word.
Oh, right.
All right, and who was?
Me.
Right.
Not to move on or anything, but let's move on to Scotland. Ideal Cynic says, do you think Craig Levine subscribes to Jonathan Wilson's theory that goals are overrated? Lot of stick, lot of criticism for Craig Levine. I know you saw some of this game, Barry.
Yeah, I thought it was an okay game, and then I was reading various reports today which suggested it was one of the worst games played in the history of football. But
well, it's the
I thought it was it was pretty open, reasonably entertaining to watch, but both teams were fairly toothless, which was reflected in the scoreline of 0-0, obviously. And Scotland had... It was their choice to play their first two games at home in this qualifying campaign. Macedonia next up. They're both tricky enough games. I mean, Macedonia can often cause problems. They certainly caused the Republic of Ireland a lot of problems in the past. And Levine's gets stick for his tactics, the way he sets the team up in a 4-1-4-1.
Picking Kenny Miller,
not picking Stephen Fletcher.
Leaving Jordan Rhodes on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, the Fletcher thing is, it seems like they're both stubborn men. Fletcher got the hump because he wasn't selected to play against the Czech Republic, I think, in the last qualifying campaign, and for Euro 2012. And then sent a text to one of this, not to Craig Levine, but to one of Craig Levine's backroom staff, saying, tell him that I don't want to be considered for selection anymore. Now, Stephen Fletcher is no world beater, and his presence on the pitch isn't going to strike terror into the heart of many teams. But when you're as sort of reliant on, or when you've as lacking in resources as Scotland are, and I think 4 games they've gone without scoring a goal. You can't afford to be that picky, particularly as he's just gotten a big money move to Sunderland.
£12 million to Sunderland and
scored twice
goals
in his first game. So I don't know if Fletcher, you know, Levine has said he will not pick him again.
Right.
But perhaps...
Well, he might not be the man doing the picking. Did you know that in the last 9 games, his Scotland have only beaten 2 teams, Liechtenstein and Lithuania?
So you reckon...
Is that true?
Yeah.
Because there was actually a kind of feeling at the end of the last qualification campaign that Scotland were actually progressing, wasn't it? And
right.
Coming on to a place. But now only 2 wins against 2 L countries.
Yeah, well, they actually beat Liechtenstein twice, so it's actually 3 wins in 9, but they've only beaten 2 teams. Wales. How much trouble are they in?
Not that much trouble.
Are they not?
Well, you know, they're probably always going to lose to Belgium at home.
Right. They've lost all 4 games under Chris Coleman now.
They have, yeah. They were missing Joe Allen on Friday night, which meant that Ashley Williams had to move up into midfield, and obviously he plays in the back for Swansea, and it was an experiment that didn't go very well. And they were kind of holding Belgium for a while until Jimmy Collins got sent off for... It wasn't the worst tackle you'd ever see, but... And they both kind of went in for it in the same manner, but because the other guy was quicker, end up with Collins catching him with only 1 foot, but his studs were up, and so he was sent off after about half an hour. And from there, you always knew that Belgium were going to win. And Bale had one shot, I think, where the keeper had to make a good save in the second half, but I think the possession stats were something like 71% to Belgium, which tells you, you know, how dominant they were. I think for Belgium, though, when I saw them play against England in June, again, it was a similar kind of game, obviously, against 11 men, and England soaked up all the pressure, and they hit them with one counter-attack. I think they had probably one shot, and they scored one goal, Welbeck scored, and they won 1-0. And Belgium, for all the possession they had, didn't really make any chances. And on Friday night, the two goals were from set pieces, one from a header from Kompany, and the other was tapped to Vertonghen, new Spurs guy, who smashed it in. And you're kind of watching that thinking, they're playing 10 men, Wales, and for 60 minutes, and they weren't really creating any chances. You're kind of thinking, they've got so many good players like Dembele, Fellaini, Hazard, but they need to be more clinical, more ruthless, not just think that passing and keeping the ball is enough to be impressive, because there are other better teams, like England, for example, who could... Right.
Or Croatia, who they face next.
Yeah, they're the kind of team who maybe won't... Who, even if they don't have all the ball all the time, they have more options, more attacking threat than Wales. So if they have 40% in possession, then they could, you know, they might need two chances and they'll beat them.
All right, well, Amy Lund's very excited about the upcoming Croatia or Belgium Croatia match. Croatia beat Macedonia with a Nikica Jelovic header. Interestingly enough, of course, Jacob, you're well in with the whole Wales setup after you had a trial with Chris Coleman.
Yeah, I'm now being considered for the next side.
Do you have a Welsh...
No, oh. I do have a Northern Irish grandad, so, you know.
All right. Northern Ireland lost, of course, to Russia. In that same group, Portugal were behind in Luxembourg for Ronaldo equalised. And, yeah, amazing. They only had a 2-1 win in the end.
Is but that go back.
Sorry? No. Just going back to your Welsh thing then. So what was the story? You went and had a day's training.
A morning's training for an hour. Yeah.
Well, that's a day, isn't it, for a footballer?
Pretty much, yeah. It was to experience the life of the international...
And then you had Xbox and tattoos in the second half.
And then I got a train home to London. It was just to experience the life of an international footballer. But then we turned up and said, I'm going to show you how to be a club footballer because you lot aren't clever enough to understand my tactics.
Chris Coleman said that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What? Why is everyone laughing?
Let me get this straight. So club football is easier to understand than international football?
Well, he said because you only have the players for a couple of days in international football, you concentrate more on tactics.
Isn't that the wrong way around? Am I really thick? Because I would assume if you only have players for a short amount of time, you'd do it as simply as possible, whereas with clubs, you can concentrate more on tactics and...
Well, what is the other thing if you're not...
Maybe I wasn't listening to anything you said.
But didn't Chris Coleman say in the article you wrote in today's Guardian after the game, he mentioned that while Gary Speed was a good manager, he didn't tend to have a plan B.
Yes, he did say that.
But Coleman doesn't even seem to have a plan A.
They've 4 games, 4 defeats, 7 goals conceded, none scored. So
plan B, put Ashley Williams in midfield.
Mm. Right. So what was your morning's training? What was the Chris Coleman approach?
We had a run.
Right.
I won the run.
So, all right, then. Yep. Who were you up against?
Yeah.
Yep, and I was a bit younger than a few people.
I can imagine.
Martin Samuels came in 6th.
And then some ball training.
What did you learn, though, about the life of a professional footballer?
I learned about the life of a professional footballer. It's quite fun. It's just quite fun to play a bit of football in the morning and then finish.
What did you learn about yourself, Jacob?
That my right foot is for standing on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And anything about Chris Coleman? Don't leave him alone with the washing machine? That's a story from a long time ago in Spain.
See, I remember when he was the up-and-coming kind of dynamic, new-thinking manager at Fulham. And I always used to be quite impressed by him.
Jose Mourinho always used to really like him. Oh. And then...
What happened? Is he now outmoded or something as time passed by?
He's a Wales manager. He's an international manager.
Yes, sorry. So he's continuing his ascent.
All right, well, listen, finally, in whatever part we've wandered into, Ireland, they won... against Kazakhstan, so that's all good then. There's a little bit of an unpleasantness with James McLean saying it was disgraceful. What did he say?
He said, as a fan, he was pleased that Ireland just got out of jail. For anyone who doesn't know, they were goal down against Kazakhstan with 4 minutes to go, and Robbie Keane got a penalty, scored it, and Kevin Doyle volleyed home a very late winner to spare Irish blushes. But James McLean didn't come off the bench for at any point and was not best pleased about that. So he effed and jeffed in a tweet and said that he was embarrassed with the performance. And then afterwards he was very apologetic. I think Giovanni Trapattoni has said, you know, he's not going to make a big deal out of it. But they have a friendly against Oman.
All right.
At Craven Cottage tomorrow night in what seems to be a pretty pointless exercise. But McLean is unlikely to start now because, you know...
What should we read into the fact that this Ireland team, Trapattoni's Ireland, now aren't even on television?
Yeah, I don't quite understand what the problem was there.
Well, Kantara, who owned the rights, put it online, but did the game online. New media and all that, but you generally do that when you can't sell the rights, when nobody's actually interested in offering you the money you want for your game.
I would be more concerned if there's a lot of ill feeling towards Mr. Trapattoni in Ireland at the moment. People seem to have decided he's a bit of a dinosaur. And what's your take on him, actually?
He's a bit of a dinosaur. Yeah. Lovely chap.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy, but he's not doing a very good job. I mean, Ireland's performances at Euro 2012 were pretty embarrassing, to be honest. And
there's some people talking on the radio at the weekend as if they'd rather have not qualified for the Euros than played like that.
I think it's always nice to be there, but and they were very well supported by fans who seemed to have had a nice time out there, but they just weren't just not good enough. They were completely outclassed in their games.
Of course, in the World Cup qualifiers for 2010... England played Ukraine, and they didn't do it on TV because Kantara had the rights, and it was the first ever England game shown only on the internet. I know this because I was one of three people who saw it, I think, because I was sat in the studio with Sven Göran Eriksson, who was giving me full and frank answers to all my questions.
Was he hard work?
A little bit. Yeah. Yes. Anyway.
Did he say anything to you that was interesting?
On air?
No, off air.
Off air, no. Not really.
Did he whisper sweet?
But I'm quite discreet. I don't, you know, I'm not one of those people who says, so Sven, have a cigar, now tell me all about.
I just loved all the stuff in Herman's autobiography about Sven.
What?
You know, talking about how he was going to Thailand, when they went to Thailand in 2007 or something, and he just said to him, I like this place, I'm going to come back here and live with two beautiful women or something.
Yep. What a prescient man he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's nice, isn't it? So now, what's the club that he's with? BEC or something, Thailand? Yeah. We're not as up on Thai football as we should be. So let's move on to a subject matter closer to home. The rest of Europe, very exciting result for Bosnia-Herzegovina. They won 8-1 in Liechtenstein. Dzeko got a hat-trick. Oh, the big scorelines, Albania 3-1 over Cyprus. Hey, the new Belgium, a.k.a. Switzerland, Paul Doyle's favourite team, they had a 2-0 win away in Slovenia. That's a good result, isn't it? It is. Holland, who had lost their last four games and have now got Van Gaal in charge, beat Turkey 2-0. Robin van Persie on the score sheet. In fact, pretty much the only big team that didn't get a win was Italy, but then they never do. They always start slowly. September's a bad month for them and that. And they only drew 2-2 in Bulgaria. Two goals from Osvaldo, who's Argentine, but let's not dwell on that. Spain, meantime, did get a final win against major footballing nation Saudi Arabia. A significant match because A, David Villa returned and scored a goal, but so did Cesc Fabregas, who of course was all over the papers doing his kind of Ronaldo wannabe thing, saying I'm not happy. And lots of people were saying, well, is there going to be a move away from Barcelona? But today on the cover of the Spanish papers, he's saying there's a conspiracy against me. And I'm only committed to my future here at Barcelona, but he does seem to have a problem with Tito Villanova.
Didn't he say that he wanted to be playing? So, and he said this. So what's the conspiracy?
I don't know. What
did he say, Jacob? That he didn't want to be on the bench.
And, yep.
No footballer likes, no one wants to be a substitute, in which point I thought, well, you know, you've got a history of many great substitutes throughout the game. You look at just... For one example, Solskjaer, someone who was perfectly happy to be on the bench, and it was a huge reason why they won the treble in 1999. So it's a squad game, to use an old cliche. But he hasn't really, it's not, this dream move hasn't exactly worked out so far. And he's when I saw their last game they played against Valencia, he was really bad and he missed two sitters. And this is something he's been doing for about 8 or 9 months now, missing. Well, he started off really well, scored loads of goals, and then since then he hasn't really done much. And their best team probably doesn't feature him at the moment, which is why he's on the bench.
All right. Producer Ben says you've got a special nickname for him for this.
Yeah, Emil Seski.
Emil Seski. So, do you think he actually wants to move away? Because apparently he could never understand Guardiola's tactics last year, and now it's all gone from bad to worse because, well, that's what he said in the back in the spring, but now he doesn't enjoy life with Villanova.
Yeah, he's quite anarchic, isn't he? He moves about all over the place, which was what I think when they beat Real Madrid in December, and he scored that goal against them. He scored the third goal. I think a lot of people who were watching Barcelona more, and Guardiola was saying that he was playing up front and they wanted him to learn how to keep his position. He was too ill-disciplined. So he doesn't seem to quite get that. And they lost a bit of shape, I think, when he played. And I think he gets a little bit in the way sometimes. And he messes up Iniesta, who's the most brilliant player to watch in the world at the moment.
Do you think he's being traumatised by his PL experience that he's just learnt he's got Gerrarditis?
Well, he's not as mental as Gerrard in his movement, but he was the main man at Arsenal, wasn't he? So, and now he goes to Barcelona and there's Messi, Xavi, Iniesta, and he can't trump them.
Yeah, you're just part of the conspiracy. Right, posts. Well, Dave Walker, one of the many people tweeting, Barry, you turned out to be right about Marouane Fellaini. What was it you said?
Well, I just said it was a throwaway comment in jest, to be honest. We were talking about how he'd had a great start to the season, and I said in my Sid Lowe cynic voice that a cynic might, I'm not doing it again.
Come on, no. Barry. Come on.
The hand gestures, Barry, as well.
That a cynic might suggest his performances would dip in quality as soon as the transfer window had shut. And lo and behold, the very next, or 2 days later, he had a bit of a shocker for Everton against
West Brom
in their defeat.
And he's now announced? Well, he's now said that this is going to be his last
agent. He wants to move in January. Is it his agent?
I think, yeah, this can be his last season.
Yeah. So it might be January, might be the end of the season. Oh, he's only 24 years old.
Yeah, I mean, he's undoubtedly a good player, but.
And it also will have been 5 seasons at Everton, which is not an unduly short period of time in the modern game.
No, absolutely not. All right, then. So, fair enough, eh?
Well, I don't think... I think in January, it's kind of... if you've made the decision to stay, if you haven't been sold, you should probably wait till the next summer. That's what I think, but I don't know why.
Well, maybe he will. Maybe he will. Here's a Porto fan in a storm. HMOCC. You big numpty, Mr. Jimbo Richardson. He had an exclamation mark on the end of that, if it wasn't aggressive enough.
Mr. Jimbo.
Yep. You would do well to research a wee bit more before perpetuating the more ear-catching soundbites about FC Porto's corruption charges / stains, etc. He encloses a Google-translated piece from sports newspaper Record, which talks about the fact that although there have been all these allegations and recordings of Pinto da Costa basically tapping up referees and all that sort of thing and making payments that he shouldn't be making, but no crime was proved in 6 years, and the only trace of evidence, the wiretap conversations, was not deemed worthy to be used as proof. Have to say, HMOCC, I might have slighted Porto, and they might be entirely innocent in all of this, but I'm not entirely trustworthy of some of these sporting processes and some of the decisions they reach. And I know I'm not entirely alone in that, but I do take your alternative view on board. Anyway, moving along, unless anybody here knows.
Was that an apology?
No, it wasn't.
Right.
I'm just saying that I'm open to other interpretations of the fact that these people had recordings of them.
It would have been a first. I was just wanting to check.
No, I've often said sorry before.
Just never did.
It's Barry who never says sorry. No, never apologise. Never explain. Isn't that right, Barry?
No. Oh.
All right, then. The runaway found, he wants to talk about stadium names, so Jessica Ennistan, all that sort of stuff. And was that a precedent, you know, of places? We had the Arnold Schwarzenegger Stadium in Graz last week, and now he's saying there's a stadium near Benghazi Airport in Libya called the Hugo Chavez Stadium. Good knowledge, runaway found. Cesc Fabregas being depressed. Can't think of a good name. Says they all seem to be clinically fed up. Hopefully Di Maria will soon reveal that he's sad. Journalists can use the title, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Di Maria? Which in itself wasn't that good, but it did spark a bit of response from other listeners, like Sail in the Darkened Seas, who has Robin Van Pensive. But then Dante Meets Bosch trumps the pair of them, with Gerard Feet of Peak, Diego Forlorn, Joe Heartbroken, Wan, Does Anything Really Matter, Gareth Ball, Abuhu Diaby, and then Brown Sugar caps it all off with Thierry Henry. It's a difficult word to pronounce, though, isn't it? Henry.
What's the most difficult word to pronounce?
Well, I'm going with Henry. I had six attempts at that, listeners. Well, I don't know, Jacob. You sound like you've got one up your sleeve. I have a lot of trouble with revelation.
Why?
I said it that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems pretty easy.
Yeah.
Revelation.
Sorry, I really struggle with that one.
Paul.
Yeah.
Sorry, Paul.
He just points at me.
Yeah. Ennui. It's a really difficult word, that. Ennui. Ennui. Hey, tell you what was exciting. The rest of the world. This weekend. Oh, yeah, the Paralympics.
Andy Murray.
Was it? Of course, Sean Connery came into the press conference.
And Alex Ferguson.
Wow, that's so crazy.
And they were both drunk. And they've been drinking with them.
Set the scene for us, Jacob.
Well, Andy Murray was playing his US Open semi-final against Thomas Berdych on Saturday night, and he won in four sets. It was a pretty exciting game. Crazy game, actually, because there was so much wind that in New York there was a tornado.
Ooh.
That... Murray was serving in the second set, and suddenly the chairs just fell over and fell onto the court. It was so blustery, and the second game had to be postponed, and the stadium evacuated.
Wow!
Yeah, and played. I mean, that's why the finals tonight against Novak Djokovic.
Monday night, right?
So he won against Berdych, and he was in his press conference, and suddenly in came Sean Connery and Sir Alex Ferguson, having clearly had a couple of glasses of red wine.
That's so cool. So they hang out together, basically.
Yeah,
Sean Connery and Sir Alex hang out together.
Yeah, and then they just came in, stood at the front, and probably a lot of American journalists not really sure tennis journalists not sure what was going on, who these two old Scottish men were.
Yeah, Sean Connery, you'd like to think they'd be across in some way.
Yeah, but maybe Alex Ferguson might not have been so sure.
Might not have been, no.
I think there were a couple of pictures of amused journalists wondering what was going on, and they stood at the front, had a chat with Andy.
Right.
And a picture with Judy.
Right.
She said they made her have a couple of glasses of wine.
Right.
And then Alex Ferguson said, "Right, I'm off. I don't talk to this lot," pointing at the journalists. And they went off.
Magnificent. That's far more interesting than anything I was about to say. But, just because I said I was going to say it, South America, Argentina, now gone back on top. They have a proper... Gabriele Marcotti was making this point, because they have the same teams always facing each other. It's a bit more like league football, There's a bit more of a chance to build up some kind of tradition and familiarity with the opponents and some kind of narrative to the whole qualifying process. But, yeah. Anyway, they've gone top now. Messi scored again. And, that man Falcao... He scored again as Colombia thrashed Uruguay, who I think were on top. No, they were the only unbeaten side left, and they got beaten 4-0 by Colombia. Good. In other news, Jamaica beat Jurgen Klinsmann's USA. That's seen as a very significant result, that.
Is it?
Yep.
Good.
And the Ivory Coast. Everyone was talking about the Ivory Coast-Senegal game.
And Ivory Coast ended up winning 4-2.
4-2. Now, there is another... There's a presumably return match in mid-October, yes?
The return match is on the 14th of October in Senegal.
Certainly is. Well, that's it then for today's very special Football Weekly. We're back to normal-ish on Thursday as we look forward to all the weekend action. Plenty of big games there. Rounding up any other midweek bits of news from the other international games. Do look forward to you joining us for that. Many thanks, Barry Glendenning, Jacob Steinberg, and Paul McGuinness, and producer Ben. Have a lovely week until then.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.